And we really are in the club again. I'm talking into the wrong end. No, I'm that out. That's okay. So Ben's saying hello. And also with us today is Yellen. And Yellen is a translator. Okay, here comes a man with coffee. See, that was nice because she's a cool. But no, the reason that we brought Yellen into the conversation and what culture was, we threw out on Twitter the idea that Harry did. And Ben was saying that the philosopher dude that was talking said the same thing. Is a translator. And
interpreter.
Interpreter. Okay, different thing.
Different.
Yeah.
Ben knows about it. Tell us about it.
Here comes a man with coffee. Ah, there we go. See, that was an actual French person talking and everything. So Yellen's not even French. She shouldn't really be on this because she's a faux French. But no. The reason that we brought Yellen into the conversation is that part of the conversation this morning about culture and what culture was revolved around language, and I threw out on Twitter the idea that language was a vehicle for culture, that actually it carried it. It was a sort of a host for the virus of culture, in a positive way. And Ben was saying that the philosopher dude that was talking said the same thing. So clearly, I'm as clever as the philosopher dude.
I don't think he said the virus thing, but
no, he didn't.
He did say that culture was an exchange, and therefore language was kind of essential, an essential building block of the cultural exchange.
He said something quite interesting about multilingual education, didn't he? As well.
He did. He said that multilingual education was a very good idea. Say, for example, you have a community where families talk in one language and the community around them talks in another language. A lot of people say that's a really bad idea to have two languages in a school because it's inefficient and it costs a lot of money. And he was saying that that's stupid. It's actually very efficient and people learn better and get to express themselves properly and become culturally more excellent.
Well, and who better to ask for a corroboration on that than someone who's genuinely multilingual, which is where you come in, Yellen. See, that's a very long introduction to why Yellen is awesome, isn't it, really? But that's what it was. So what are your languages?
Well, my mother tongue is Spanish, and then I speak French, English, and Italian. And I don't know, I learn all of them, so I'm not bilingual. They are all acquired, the foreign languages I speak. And what I think is that, each language has, it's like a different color, and I'm thinking, I don't know, what were you thinking when we were walking? You said something about picking languages for...
Well, yeah, I said that certain languages seem tuned to certain kinds, modes of thought.
Yeah.
So I use the example of quite conspicuously specific language. It's about being precise. It's about not being misunderstood.
Yeah. Well, me being an emotional person, to me it's more like about the feelings. Maybe it's not a vision of the thing, but like when I want to express something, it's very different. The same message, it sounds really, really different in depending on the language you pick. So sometimes, I decide to use a language instead of another. I'm thinking about Facebook, which is allows you to speak in any language that you want. And the message, to me, it comes differently if it's in English or in Spanish or in French. It has a different flavor. Even if it's the same idea, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Sure.
I think social media is kind of an interesting... social media is an interesting test environment for this because it's fairly easy to be multilingual in it, because you're normally... that ideas can be self-contained. So you post a Facebook update and it's in a language, or you post a tweet and it's in a language. So actually you get to experience them alongside one another as distinct elements.
Yeah, because in a real life, in a conversation, it's usually one language.
Yeah.
You cannot really choose or change languages like that. But,
Can you imagine a situation in which it would be useful to be able to actually... kind of, you know, that if you were sat with friends who had a kind of shared set of languages, you could actually go, French is going to work best for this.
No, actually that happens too. I'm thinking about bilingual friends or friends, which are, which master both language, Spanish and English, or French and Spanish, and sometimes you find yourself speaking in this kind of mix, like Spanglish or Frenchish, and you pick... unconsciously, I don't know why, but there are certain words, certain expressions that you decide to say in a language or not in the other. But to me, it's more like related to emotions and more than the idea itself. That's my view.
Language again becomes a very interesting metaphor for the idea of combining and using elements of different cultures, because words are quite distinct. And so when you drop an English word into a French conversation, it's kind of obvious what's going on. It's not as abstract as, say, incorporating African elements into a dance routine or Indian elements into a music piece, where it's often quite difficult to see where the lines are drawn, that you tend not to. I mean, I suppose you can anglicise French words and Spanishise English words, but it doesn't happen very often. That most of the time you choose a word that was distinct, and that you could actually celebrate both languages by doing that. Nothing is watered down by doing that.
Yeah. I think in English you have much more French words than, for example, in Spanish. You like it. The love and hate, relationship between British and French, the English and French.
I think it's also part of that cultural distinction we were talking about on the way, where I said that I think that English is a Mongol language, that it actually is a combination of lots of other languages.
We don't have that many Spanish words.
We're linguistic magpies, but there are lots of German derived words. That English isn't primarily a Latin language, but a lot of it is. A lot of it's Germanic, some of it's Norse. We've got words from most of the populations that have made Britain its home, that there are bits of their language that are incorporated into ours. And we do, and that language kind of sits alongside other culture, like food and clothing and music, as that Britain, I guess it's a part of it's probably us dealing with post-colonial guilt, that actually that the country is made richer by that incorporating of those elements, the sort of the various immigrant populations actually making Britain a much richer place to be, which is kind of interesting in the light of David Cameron's pronouncement that multiculturalism has failed. Because he said that, and so did Angela Merkel in Germany. She said it as well. And for where I'm sat, it kind of that seems like an insane thing to say.
This morning, our philosopher friend was saying quite clearly that was what they'd said was ridiculous and wrong. And that culture, you know, cultural excellence is built on diversity. Diversity is the basis of it. If everything's the same, there is no real culture. There's no exchange. You can't have exchange if everything's the same. So, I think that's... I can't remember what I was saying.
Yeah, well, you're talking about
multiculturalism. You say, you know, the whole point is that England has built a sort of a solid and good culture on the diverse cultures that have sort of, you know, entered it and left it, and that were conquered and left and whatever else. You know, it's all combined into something very interesting.
There's this revival, because in France it's happening as well, a revival of national identity versus multicultural, and it comes from some kind of fear, but
absolutely. And I mean, what they were talking about this morning was that the fact that the whole revival of national identity, or anyone being sort of defensive about national identity or racist, is it comes from fear and comes from a weak identity. The people who have a weak identity, mostly because they have a weak cultural education, they have a weak sense of their own culture. If they had a strong sense of their own culture, they'd be happy to accept and appreciate other cultures. But it's because people fear that their culture is going to be somehow taken over, they're going to lose it. Which is crazy. But I mean, it's also
rooted in cultural scapegoating, because you very rarely hear kind of the different cultures within a country compared in the way that you would an immigrant culture. So you very rarely hear the poor in Britain laying the blame at the feet of the aristocracy, which historically, you know, the British aristocracy have far more blood in their hands, you know, and have had a far more pernicious impact on the poor, on the working class, than the idea that a bunch of people came over from India and Pakistan and stole our jobs. You know, that's the kind of the common rhetoric, but actually that's very lazy and kind of fallacious scapegoating.
Yeah, and I mean, in what Cameron was saying, it was interesting when he said that multiculturalism had failed. He was talking about the sort of the passive tolerance version of multiculturalism, yeah. Where they're saying this morning, which is the version where you basically put up a wall between yourself and the incoming culture and say, yes, we'll tolerate it, yeah. By kind of essentially ignoring it, yeah. And not assimilating or understanding it. And he was saying that for multiculturalism to exist, and in the way that it should exist to diverse cultures, you have to have some kind of active multiculturalism. You have to sort of seek to build bridges and understand how the cultures work.
We
haven't tried to do that. We've tried the passive version, and so it hasn't worked because it was never going to work.
I think in that context, tolerance is a really shitty word to use.
Exactly.
Tolerance would be the passive way.
Yeah.
It's actually a really clumsy word. You either celebrate diversity, or you question bits that are counter to fundamental human rights.
Yeah.
The idea that you would tolerate something that was oppressive because it's culture, strikes me as ridiculous.
And you're also judging. If you're tolerating, you're putting yourself
it's a very colonial mindset.
Definitely.
It's very kind of, we'll let them do their stuff.
You know. I'll let them do it.
Yeah. It's very kind of permission-based notion of our relationship with other cultures.
Yeah.
And I think that actually celebrating diversity is a much more healthy kind of start to it. But this ties into another conversation. Maybe we'll have to stop and start a different chat because we're 11 minutes into this. But Billy Bragg started a campaign a few years ago around the notion of us needing a British Bill of Rights.
Mm.
That we have no, because, and it was in the discussion around the kind of the Americans having a constitution, and us having nothing constitutionally British at all. We have a legislature, we've got a legal system,
yeah.
But we don't actually have a kind of written shared set of values. And he was basically saying that if you have that kind of reference point, then you can celebrate culture within that, but you have a kind of a framework for understanding that which are fundamentally human rights, regardless of culture. So, because this morning we were talking about the tolerance of cultural practices that are discriminatory or are oppressive, and the weird thing was that they were all spoken about from the point of view of the oppressor and the oppressor's right to their culture, but actually, as a host nation, as a government, you have a responsibility to the oppressed.
Yeah.
So to tolerate cultures that are inherently sexist or misogynistic, that actually that's not about a man's right to be misogynistic, that's about a woman's right to be protected from that, by the culture, and that a Bill of Rights would kind of provide the framework for that.
But you have international charters.
This is why you're saying this morning that it actually just comes down to the whole cultural rights thing, essentially comes down to human rights. If you have a basic level of human rights between two different groups of people, and they both agree that those aren't going to be surpassed. And he said that doesn't really happen, because even in Europe, when they're banning of the minarets or whatever it might be, occasionally people go, we're just going to ignore that and actually do something else. If you actually stick to it, then you have the right to express your cultural identity. You have the right to kind of have the cultural exchange and build your cultural identity, whether it's in your own society or with people around you, and there can't in theory there can't be much of a problem with that.
And that's kind of the point at which we realise that the discussion about culture between an English person and a French person is very different than the conversation that goes on between someone who's from the Roma people, a gypsy, and an Italian, for example.
Yeah.
Where you have, France has a problem with this as well, that kind of sort of state oppression of the Roma people is happening all over Europe.
Yeah.
And so there was one of the people on one of the delegates at the convention, the workshop is from the Roma community. And he was in my group, and for him, conversation about culture was happening on a completely different level, because it wasn't an abstract conceptual thing about your right to expression. It was actually something that had quite
concrete traditions, large,
but also had kind of legal implications. There are places where, if you are explicitly Romanish in that way, then you're going to get arrested. There are places, in southern Italy, they had a big clear out recently and kind of threw them out of the country. It's a really, if you are kind of a landless population who live in diaspora like that, then your understanding of the purpose of your culture and the need to protect it is very different from an indigenous majority powerful culture, where you at least have your own space to retreat into, whether that's England or France or even America. So we're going to stop there because we could probably go on for hours. Yelen, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
It's nice to have you on board.